Monday night on the Fan Pregame. It's Jesse and Ailish back again until Wednesday. So Jesse back in the seat after we had a nice three-hour show on Friday on trade deadline. Lots to go through. We're pregaming Monday night hockey tonight. We've got Washington, Winnipeg, and Islanders and Kings starting on after us at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet. Roster's all set post-trade deadline. We're going to talk to one of the winners of the deadline.
Oh, no doubt.
Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Sheffield day off in just a few minutes. He did not take a day off over the trade deadline. Big contender Tyler Toffoli. They're looking like a Stanley Cup ready team.
He's making his debut tonight. Should be fun. Later on this evening, Raps on the road to face the defending champion Denver Nuggets. The Raptors roster, unfortunately, is an absolute shambles.
It's so bad.
lots of guys out, and one more loss actually clinches a losing season for only the second time since 2013 for the Raptors. And I'm going to go out on a limb, Ailish, and say it's going to take something special to avoid an L tonight. Michael Grange is going to join us at 6:30. We'll ask him all about what we can expect ahead of tonight's game and moving forward with so many bodies missing. It's Raps and Nuggets on Sportsnet 1 at 9 p.m. Eastern time.
What you need to know is that the longest tenured player for the Raptors tonight is Grady Dick. So.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't even know how it's possible.
It's possible. We're going to go through some.
Tough.
Yeah, it's tough. We're going to go through some spring training tidbits to share. As you all probably know by now, Canadian legend Joey Votto on a minor league deal on Friday. We've got some really nice quotes for him. We'll play later in the show. He's obviously going to have a prove it type of spring training. So we'll get through that. And then Vlad being held out due to a knee contusion. So latest on all spring training a little later in the show.
Yeah. Also, what's going on in the NFL? It just name after name after name has been dropping. We've been getting notifications all day long. Kirk Cousins going to the Atlanta Falcons. Saquon Barkley leaving the New York Giants for the Philadelphia Eagles, staying within the NFC East, but in a different uniform. Mm-hmm. Is Saquon still have it in him, or is he a little bit washed? Like, we'll get into all of those details because the names have been flying off the board fast and furious. Tony Pollard to the Titans. There's so many more. We're going to go through all of them, because it has been a very, very busy day in the National Football League.
All right, before we bring in Kevin Sheffield day off in a few minutes, dust has settled, as we said. These are the players that are going to play for your team to make a Stanley Cup push. Updated odds show that in terms of Canadian teams, let's just focus with Canadian teams because we've got all week to kind of go through the rest of the league. But Oilers, the favorite from the Canadian teams, Canucks right behind them, Jets behind them, and then the Leafs. Oilers plus 650, Jets 1250. I mean, for me, when I look at the order of that, Oilers, Canucks, Jets, Leafs, I think the Leafs are well-suited, but I'm surprised there's such a big gap between the Oilers and the Jets, because look what the Jets did this trade stretch, right? Mm-hmm. It was getting Sean Monahan a couple weeks ago. Obviously, Hellebuck and Shifley, like, locked up in the summer meant that they had this full-speed approach all season long, and they wrapped it up with a really wonderful trade deadline with Tyler Toffoli and more. So I'm saying, and not just because our next guest is
on
the
line. Yeah, look at that. That's convenient.
But I'm not just saying it just because he's going to join us in a second. But, you know, I'm thinking the Jets are off to a really great start. Let's bring in Kevin Sheffield-Day off, the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets. Kevin, appreciate you taking the time today. Congrats on a really great trade deadline and everything your team did to add. We'll start with Tyler Toffoli, who's making his debut tonight. What went into the decision to add him and what he brings to what's already an impressive forward depth up front for you guys?
Well, thanks very much for having me today. It's, you know, obviously trade deadlines they're interesting times. You know, we decided to kind of jump out early there because we had a decisive need and we liked what was there with Sean Monahan. So, you know, that was a good fit for us. And one thing that we did have then was the luxury to kind of watch our team unfold and play some games as we headed to the actual deadline. And we were able to kind of take a look and see what might be out in the marketplace and what might be a good fit. And, you know, fortunately for us, Tyler came available maybe a little bit later in the whole kind of trade deadline frenzy. And, you know, we were able to make a deal with the Devils and find a way to win.
Well, Toffoli, line mates or former line mates with Sean Monahan, his Flames teammate and OHL line mate. And Monahan, you acquired during the All-Star break. Did Toffoli's, you mentioned it there, did Toffoli's relationship with Monahan maybe make it a little bit easier to bring in a guy like that at the trade deadline? Obviously, everyone sort of covets a guy like Tyler Toffoli, but when the familiarity is there, is that something that you look into when bringing a player into the fold?
Well, you know that obviously it's well known that Tyler's just a character player and obviously has a tremendous amount of experience when it comes to the playoffs and winning the Stanley Cup, going to the finals. We played against him obviously in different years, and you just know how hard he plays. And he's known for scoring some clutch goals and is there when the chips are down. But real interesting thing was when we did make the eventual trade, one of the first phone calls was from Sean Monahan saying welcome to the team, which seemed kind of odd. He'd been in a part of the team already for so long that he was ingrained in it. That was the benefit of being able to jump out and get Sean so early, and then obviously Tyler coming in and Colin Miller giving us another option on defense there. So we identified those as the kind of the needs that we wanted, looked at the marketplace, and tried to do some deals as best we could.
So adding Sean Monahan, as you mentioned, early February, like you're getting ahead of the curve, at least in terms of some of the additions that others have made. I wonder for you with the Western Conference, like we've been talking about this playoff picture, it's a gauntlet. It might be one of the most competitive Western Conference pictures that we've seen in a long time. I wonder if that helped you like shape getting on it earlier when you look at like some of the big guys on the other side that are adding. Did that make you guys get a little bit active earlier?
Well, so obviously, you look at the things that might be available, and you have to stress might because you never know what's truly going to be available or when it's going to be available come deadline time, because every team has different situations and circumstances. But when we identified we wanted to get a centerman, and when I started my negotiations with Montreal, Kent was very convicted in what he wanted, and we had to pay a price, and we're willing to, and that's how we got the deal done when we did. And kudos to him. We tried to do it a bunch of different ways, but Kent stuck his ground, and we are obviously glad to pay it if you can bring a player like Monty in and just fit in so seamlessly.
So last year's trade deadline, you go out and you get Niederreiter and Namestnikov, and this year it's Toffoli and Miller, two straight years of adding. As a general manager, how do you get to the place where you want to, quote unquote, reward your players by adding someone or multiple people in this case at the trade deadline? Like, where is that mental hurdle that you have to get over that, hey, we're seeing the results on the ice, let's go out and supplement this roster?
Well, first and foremost, there has to be players out there that you believe fit into what you're trying to accomplish. I don't think make deals just for the sake of making them or saying, okay, here, we just did something for the sake of doing something. They have to fit in. Nino was a player that, I had, known for years, had different discussions with his representative over the course of time. Big body that, again, obviously, had another year on his contract as well, which was very appealing to us at the time. And then Vladdy played for Bones the year before. So, he's kind of that Swiss Army knife type of guy that, he didn't come available. Both of them actually didn't come available to really late in the process last year. Nashville looking at doing some of the things they did, and Vladdy actually went from Tampa Bay to San Jose before he really became available to us. So those are the things that you just try and you be as nimble as you can. Your scouts are ranking and rating and talking about guys and going to games all year for kind of the unknown. You never really know what might be available, and that's why they do the jobs that they do, that when by chance you get an opportunity at someone, you have a good book on them.
When you decided to extend or sign the contracts with Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck the same time, the same season, like it was a really nice press release for everybody to get it all at once. But I wonder for you if that makes it easier to say we have that core set, we've committed to this big 7-year contract extension. Now adding these other individuals, adding these other things, it's easier to sell, right? Because you have the bones set in stone. I wonder if that really just set this Winnipeg Jets season up for one that you're going to pay, you're going to add, you're going to go for it, because you started that a little bit earlier before the puck had really dropped.
Well, it really goes back to, you mentioned that the two deadline deals that we made last year, but also the summer, with the, acquiring, Vilardi, Iafallo, Kupari, and obviously the second round pick, those were a signal to, I think, guys like Scheif and Helly that, we're still going for it here. We got a really good, want to try to keep it together as much as we can. And we're going to keep on trying to win. Certainly, they have to hold up their end of the bargain and be a team that, comes together, plays the right way, because we're nothing if we don't play the right way. But Deadline deals, acquisitions, they don't guarantee anything. It really just comes down to, trying to give yourself as much depth as you can, the best, set yourself up as best you possibly can for what you hope is a very, very long run. And if we're fortunate enough to go deep, you're going to need everybody. So it's something that, again, you try to prognosticate, but you just can't. But all I know is at the end of the day, we as the Winnipeg Jets have to play a certain way, to be successful.
It's funny because earlier today I was going through some old articles written last summer after the playoff loss, and it was all like, here's why the Winnipeg Jets have to rebuild. This is the key for them rebuilding. And then you go out and make the PLD trade and sign Scheifele and Hellebuyck, as Ailish mentioned, to long-term deals. That was no longer the case. I'm just curious what you saw that other people failed to see in this team, that you knew that the Winnipeg Jets were going to be able to stay competitive, and not just competitive, but near the top of the division, near the top of the Western Conference for the foreseeable future.
I think one thing that I saw, I looked at things through a little bit of a different lens in that Vegas series. I saw a team that jumped out and played exceptionally well, won game one. I saw a team that lost in overtime. I saw a team that lost their, Norris caliber defenseman early in the game and continue to make a game of it. I saw a team that lost their number one centerman the next game. And knowing that internally both Josh and Scheif were not going to be able to come back until at the earliest, maybe the third round. I knew we were up against some insurmountable odds, but the will or the the desire from the coaching staff and disappointment from even the players' perspective when we had the exit meetings, that showed me there was a lot of passion in there. There was a lot of belief, and you got to have a lot of things go your way in the playoffs as well to ultimately be successful. But we even at that point in time, there was lots of things that still needed to unfold, and we needed to take a deep breath. We needed to take a step back, evaluate, and just kind of look at all our options. And as your options kind of start to unfold, you your plan starts to unfold as well.
How easy is it to add when you have a goaltender like Connor Hellebuyck, who's having a Vezina season, pretty much leading in every statistical category, steadiness? How does that impact the team? I mean, the locker room for one, but the decision-making that you have to make to add and to make things fit.
Now, you're very fortunate when you have a player like, Helly and a special player like he is, and a special person too. The two things that really became apparent when I sat down with Scheif and with Helly at the onset of training camp, when we started to really, dig in and negotiate, was that, there was two things. They both had an insatiable desire to want to win, and they really wanted to win with this group. And, that was, very, very apparent, when we had those kind of conversations. And everything Helly has achieved in his career has been because of his hard work. Nothing's ever been given to him. He, revamped his trainings in the summer. He studies the game. He studies the nuances of the game that I'm just amazed when I hear, him talk, or, his people that he works with talk about just, the stuff that they actually work on. So, again, we're very fortunate to have drafted him, and he's come through our organization, but we're, even more fortunate that, they want to win here and that they chose to stick it out.
What about the job Rick Bowness has done? Because we love him in our line of work because of his refreshing honesty in the media. And we got it again after Saturday's game against the Vancouver Canucks, where he said it was the worst effort that he's seen in his 2-year stint as head coach. So he calls it like he sees it. But you said in one of your earlier answers that the Winnipeg Jets have to play a certain way in order to stay where they are in the standings. And I think you can trace a lot of that back to Rick Bowness. What have you seen from him that's impressed you in just the way that he has structured this team?
Yeah, well, one thing Bones is he's authentic. It's not like there's any punches pulled, but in the same token, he's like everybody's grandfather too. he's that guy that players just want to play for. They don't want to disappoint. They want to go through that wall for him. He's stood behind the bench more than any other coach in different capacities, obviously, but any other coach in the National Hockey League. And he does this for one reason and one reason only, and that's to chase that Stanley Cup. So, again, it's, the emotions, the compassion, the You know, the feelings that he has towards the players and they have towards them, it's very real. And, you know, obviously when Judy got sick earlier this year, you know, you really begin to see just how much guys care about him and how much he cares about the guys and about family. And you know, that's the foundation that we obviously want to build our organization on.
Last one for you. We're talking to Kevin Sheveld, Winnipeg Jets general manager. So we know Gary Bettman was in town last week to discuss, I guess, the state of the franchise and some revenue discussions. How did those go? Maybe what are the major takeaways while you guys approach the offseason and what's next for the Jets?
Well, you know, again, obviously, you know, there's everyone, you know, has had some tough times, whether it's through COVID or whether it's you know, through the financial crisis or the different things that are going on, you know, in the world today. But, you know, again, as an organization here, you know, we have tremendous commitment and tremendous belief in this marketplace, you know, from our ownership. But, you know, again, we need to fill the building. It's, you know, there's no misconceptions that, you know, the economic models, you know, work without a full building. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's one side of the things. I'm fortunate I get to deal with Mark Chipman and you know, David Thompson and their group on the other side of it. And that's to try to put a winning team together. And you know, right from the moment that the franchise came, you know, from Atlanta to Winnipeg, there, you know, it has been all in right from the beginning. It's been all about winning. It's been all about doing the right things at the right time. To try to put a winning product on the ice, because that's what, you know, that's what they care about the most. You know, obviously the business and economic model needs to be there to, you know, to help sustain that, because that vision, you know, doesn't want to change here. Like it's all about trying to win. Yeah. It's never been about anything else.
Well, it looks like they'll have a lot to cheer for down the stretch. Congrats on a great trade deadline. Lots more hockey to come. We're excited to hopefully see a Canadian team get far. It doesn't matter where they're from. We're just excited to see Canadian teams in the playoffs. So thanks again for joining us and all the best the rest of the season.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks so much. Appreciate
it. Thanks so much. Kevin Sheveldayoff of the Winnipeg Jets. We were just mentioning before we brought him on about some of the shakeups here after the trade deadline. And the Jets, I think, are not getting as much credit, or the market isn't as hot as them. As I'm feeling. But I mean, tonight they're having Tyler Toffoli make his debut. We've got that at Monday Night Hockey. It's at 7:30 after us against Washington. Spoiler alert, I got them in my best bets too. I'm not like being, you know, a homer for Kevin Sheveldayoff, but I mean, look at what the Jets do. They have four, like their forward depth is one of the deepest in the league. They've got the best, or arguably the best goaltender in the league. Like, it just looks like the way you want to build a playoff roster. That fan base will be hungry, you know, the whiteout when it's time. Like, it's, I'm really excited to see a lot of energy around this team because, yeah, a lot of the times the dialogue can be about attendance and revenue. Mm-hmm. And right now I think that they have stacked this roster and they have bought into it. They signed their guys long term and they said, we're going in. Like, it's nice when a franchise makes a distinct direction, and the Winnipeg Jets have done that.
It really is so funny because I honestly was reading articles from June as soon as they had lost in the postseason, and we remember the Rick Bonus famous press conference where he ripped the team and walked off, and that was it for the Jets.
Yep.
And he wondered, okay, are they going to re-sign Scheifele and Hellebuck, and do Scheifele and Hellebuck even want to re-sign? Then they signed the 7-year matching deals, and there was this push for the Winnipeg Jets to remain competitive, and that's exactly what they've done. It's funny, I watched the game on Saturday against the Vancouver Canucks.
That's a tough one.
And that was, like Rick Bonus said, probably their worst performance of the entire season.
I was so excited for that game too, talking to Canada, and then I was like, where'd the Jets go?
It was coming off the Leafs and Habs, and you're like, okay, this is a nice little rivalry in Canucks and Jets, and then the Canucks just destroy them 5-0. But it didn't damper what I think about the Winnipeg Jets. They didn't have Toffoli in the lineup. Mm-hmm. It was one bad game, and they've bounced back from bad games previously. It actually made me more excited about the rest of the Canadian teams. It made me even more sure that the Vancouver Canucks are a really good hockey team to do that to the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, Thatcher Demko leaves in the middle of the game, and the Canucks still only allow 22 shots and just a dominating performance. So you were asking, you know, which Canadian teams do we think put together the best roster moving forward? I think they're all really, really good. They all have really, really big strengths. And the Jets one, like you mentioned, they might not have the top end talent, at least up front, that some of the other teams do. But with the backbone of Hellebuck and Josh Morrissey on D, the sky's the limit for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, you look at the Oilers, who are the favorite Canadian team. And, yeah, I mean, nobody has Connor McDavid on their team, but their goaltending has been a major question.
Yeah.
And they didn't make as many aggressive moves as some Oilers fans had hoped for probably around the trade deadline. And the Canucks have been atop the Pacific for, what, 90 days? Like, they've just owned the Pacific. The thing that's most interesting to me, and it's going to be awesome, I'm excited for playoff hockey already, is the Stars, the Jets, the Avs, the Canucks, the Oilers, the Kings, the Golden Knights. Like, just think of all of those monster teams, and one of them has to prevail to be the Stanley. Like, I don't even know how we're going to begin to make predictions to go head-to-head, because any of those teams that I just named feel like they could win the Stanley Cup.
It's got to be so frustrating for the fan bases. It's like, you know, in Toronto, in this market, you know, we've experienced that for years, in the sense that the Leafs have to ultimately get through the Bruins or the Panthers or the Lightning at some point.
But the Western
and
Conference
is
stacked.
It's like that everywhere you look. It's almost to think that you have to go through four rounds against teams that just seem like somehow they're going to keep getting better and better and better every single time. It makes you think, like, when you look at Vegas occupying the second wild card in the Western Conference, and then
and you
Nashville,
see what they did. It's crazy.
Who's the hottest team in the league, and you see what Vegas did at the deadline. It's like, my goodness, you can be as excited as you possibly can be going into the postseason. You can love your chances, but if you run into one of these buzzsaws, and it's not like hockey, you can make the argument that there's a lot of luck involved at times in the playoffs. Like, you get into the dance and anything can happen.
We thought that last year, the Panthers, right?
Yeah.
Now they've kind of shut me up on that
now
because they're good.
They're good. But now it's like hot goalie, not a hot goalie. These teams are like from top to bottom stacked, and it's going to make for an incredible. We would say the first round of the playoffs is probably the best time to be a hockey fan. And this feels like it's going to be the ultimate of that this time around.
Yeah, so the Jets facing the Capitals tonight at 7:30. That's on Monday Night Hockey, followed by the Islanders and the Kings. And the Islanders are their own success story. It's unbelievable what they've done. They're in a playoff spot. They've won six in a row. They did not do anything at the trade deadline, though. So I wonder if you're sitting in that locker room. I mean, I feel like the Islanders are the type of team that will look around and they'll take the approach of, hell yeah, our GM like believes in us. We don't need any additions whatsoever. And obviously they've got the right coach at the helm. So they could be a feisty one to keep an eye on. They're just right behind the Flyers in that Metro division. So they're on later tonight against the Kings. So lots of good hockey to come. I mean, it feels like must watch anytime you get an opportunity to. We quickly mentioned it before we take a break about NFL free agency now. A lot has been going on today. If you've got your alerts on, they're buzzing. We don't have time to go through every single one of these signings or these moves. But I think the most buzzy one would be the Kirk Cousins move.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley and Russell Wilson, probably the top three. I'll let you talk about which one you think is maybe the most impactful.
Well, I do think that it's Kirk Cousins, and I understand that he's coming off an Achilles tear, and at his age, that can be a difficult thing to recover from. But I think when you look at the landscape of the division that the Atlanta Falcons play in and who the Atlanta Falcons have on their team, you have the Bijan Robinsons, you have the Drake Londons, you have the Kyle Pitts, you have the skill players at your disposal. And new head coach Raheem Morris had said, you know, he probably wouldn't have the job if the Atlanta Falcons had better quarterback play a year ago, and they desperately needed a quarterback. And despite the age of Kirk Cousins, despite the injury, he's coming off what would have been the best season of his entire career. And I think it's a great move that sets them up to be immediate favorites in that division that is not the best division in football. So I think it's a great move. It had to be done in Atlanta. And then on the flip side, I don't know how you feel about the Saquon Barkley thing, but it just feels like in today's day and age, to pay that amount of money for a running back who's going into his seventh year, who's had significant injury issues over the course of his career, I just don't know that paying for a guy like Saquon Barkley is worth the premium. When how many times have we seen running backs just step into good situations like the Eagles have, great offensive line? I don't know that you're going to be getting your bang for your buck. Yeah, it's a flashy move, but I'm not sure it necessarily helps the Eagles to the extent that you would think, given the name and who Saquon Barkley is.
Yeah, there's a lot of money to go around in the NFL. I don't know if that's using it the most wisely. It's, 3 years, $37.75 million, just behind, like, CMC and two others. I believe he's, like, the third or fourth richest running back at this point. But, yeah, the Kirk Cousins one is definitely, I think, the buzziest online. I live with a Falcons fan, so I have to be supportive of this one. Go Kirk Cousins.
It's a lot of money, too. Like 4 years, $180 million. Like Cousins has made like something like $400 million over the career. Like it's insane. When you think of Kirk Cousins, like, I don't know. I think he's like a borderline elite quarterback, I guess. I mean, Justin Jefferson probably helped a lot in that regard with his time.
It'll just be like
Minnesota.
Nice to see what the Falcons can do with someone that's competent. How
competent,
about that?
Yes.
And like,
yes.
Then
yes.
We can discuss what word. Other things they need, but it's just been so hard to see what this team could look like when the most important position was just not occupied, it felt like.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Lots to go through still on our show on the Fan Pregame. We're going to take a quick break because Michael Grange is going to join us. Yeah, we're going to get into tough talk with the Raptors. Their lineup tonight is basically one or two moves away from the Raptors show and Michael Grange being in the starting lineup tonight. If they could get a quick charter, they would be there. We'll take a quick break. Raptors are up later tonight against Denver at 9 p.m. on Sportsnet. On the other side, we'll talk Grange. We'll take a look around what's going on in spring training. Vladdy, Votto, and a little maybe review of USC 299, which was awesome on Saturday night.
Everything you need to know about the Raptors and the biggest stories around the NBA. Smith and Jones. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan Pregame. Jesse and Ailish. Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan, a little later in the evening. You can catch the Toronto Raptors and the Denver Nuggets at 9 p.m. on Sportsnet 1. And you may catch our next guest in possibly the rotation. Michael Grange joins us. Grange, what's going on? Who is playing for the Raptors tonight, and is it you?
I'm not playing. Ooh. I mean, I would play. Like, I would sacrifice... As I said, I think I would take a charge from Aaron Gordon for one
for the content.
NBA game, for one NBA game check.
Okay,
I would not do it for content. We all know content. We all know content doesn't pay.
People's attention spans are too. They move on too quickly anyway. It's not worth it.
They go viral.
Well, and then what?
Exactly.
No, I would take the game check up front. But
okay,
no, I won't be playing. Emmanuel quickly won't be playing. Name me some names. I'll tell them if they're playing or not.
Okay, so Scotty Barnes out, Jakoperto out, quickly out, Trent out, Boucher out. Am I missing anyone else?
No, I think that's it.
It's a pretty good amount of players.
Yep. RJ Barrett is back. He had the little food poisoning the other day. He's back.
Oh.
I feel bad for Kelly Olynyk.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of by default become a starting center, and he got smashed around by Josef Nurcic. The other day in Phoenix, and now he had DeAndre Ayton in Portland, and now he gets... I wouldn't want to play against Nikola Jokic, would you?
No, most definitely not. Like, so who has the most to gain when a situation like this arises, when there's so many injuries? Obviously, I know, we'll get to this in a second. We know how the impact it could have on the standings and the Raptors' future first-round pick, but who are you looking for to maybe make an imprint on their time here as a Toronto Raptor when a situation like this arises, when there's so many regulars out of the lineup?
Javon Freeman Liberty, I think, would be... Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I kind of expect he'll be starting tonight. I can't say for sure, but when you kind of go do a mental inventory of anyone who could play point guard for the Raptors, he might be the only one.
It's amazing.
You know, and guys like Oshai Agbaje, like, you know, he's still trying to show that he can be an NBA player. You know, Grady Dick is probably going to get a second start, third start of his career, second in a row. And, you know, any opportunity for him is really valid. And basically, I would almost say everyone except Kelly Olynyk, who's, you know, he's fairly well established as to what his NBA future is going to be like. But almost anyone else, like, these are all, as much as it's pretty meaningless basketball, like, you just can't mask that, especially with the Raptors draft situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for guys who are trying to find NBA employment or improve their status, these opportunities are are gold. They really are.
Yeah, you know, you never want to encourage tanking, and certainly the Raptors will give their very best effort tonight and throughout the rest of the season. But the first-round pick situation is kind of massive, a game and a half up on the Grizzlies, who currently occupy the sixth pick, and the Raptors keep it if they finish in the bottom six. So how high are the stakes here on determining at least the short-term future of this team? I know the pick sort of rolls over into next year, and you know, the Raptors could be bad again next year, and you could find yourself in the same situation. But how important is the rest of the season to you, and whether the Raptors finish in the bottom six?
Well, I mean, that's what's I mean, people need to be clear on this, and what's kind of unique about, well, it's not unique, but it's why this situation makes how they fare you're really kind of meaningless, is the pick that, whether the pick conveys or not, isn't determined until after the lottery balls drop. Mm-hmm. And so so it's not really exactly where you finish in terms of your order. That does determine your odds in the lottery. So, you know, if they finish seventh where they are now, you know, they still have a chance of moving up and keeping their pick. They just have a smaller chance.
Right.
If they finish sixth, they still have a chance of not keeping their pick. It's just a smaller chance of that. So, but in terms of, you know, what you would wish to happen, I mean, it's a really fascinating conundrum, because I think ultimately, you know, the future's not guaranteed, right? So I think if you are trying to build a team that's as good as it can get, as soon as it can get, I suspect you want to keep that pick this year.
Yeah.
And hope that it falls in the top six. Maybe you get lucky. And I think the Raptors had the seventh best odds when they got Scottie Barnes at four, if you recall. And so if you get something like that, and again, it's not a particularly deep draft or strong draft. There's no obvious superstar talent, but there's talent. And, you know, and even if you go back in some of the historically weak drafts, even in the 25 years I've been doing this, you know, there's always some players. There is always some players, and sometimes some just fantastic players. And then, you know, the guy we're going to watch tonight was the 41st mm-hmm. overall pick in a pretty so-so draft. So, you know, you just got to get your picks right. And, you know, but I think the point you're raising there is the possibility that they, you know, look, they keep their pick this year, and it's, you know, they end up picking five or six, and it's, or let's just say six. And, you know, and it's a guy who's an interesting player, but he's probably not going to help you for a couple of years, maybe two or three. And next year, you're kind of in the same situation in a much stronger draft, and you don't keep your pick. And that's a setback to me, you know, you know, so I think really, if you're being completely ruthless about this, is you want to be greedy. Like, you want your pick this year, and if you are really serious about trying to build a team that's ultimately going to be a championship contender, you probably need to keep your pick next year too. And then hopefully in that mix, along with Scotty, along with Grady, along with, you know, RJ, along with Emmanuel Quickley, it turns into a core that is kind of young and fun and can, you know, really develop into something. But, yeah, it's a really it is, you know, unique is an overused word, but it's an unusual set of circumstances the Raptors have found themselves in.
I wonder for you how Darko has dealt with those unusual circumstances. When you think of it, the broader picture, you know, it's his first time as an NBA head coach. He's dealing with a roster that sold off key pieces of leadership and of, you know, at least time on the court, struggled with injuries, struggled with consistency, and now dealing with that precarious position with the lottery and the draft and the picks. How has Darko, I guess, steadied those waters as the guy steering the ship? Or is there something more he could be doing? And is this maybe the time that we learn more about Darko Rajakovic as a head coach when they're going through all these ups and downs?
Yeah, I feel like we've learned a lot about Darko through this. I mean, I have done some asking around and you know, guys at various levels of the organization, and I've talked to some people from, you know, I talked to Thad Young the other day, and just, you know, and the guy gets really good reviews. You know, he's I really think he is what you see, or what I'm lucky enough to see, which is not all that different with what Darko presents publicly, which is just a super sincere guy who lives and breathes 24/7 this job. And I think the thing that he has really going in his favor is he is very, very committed, and I don't think in a fake or calculating way, I just think in a sincere way, to develop meaningful connections with not just players, but sort of people throughout the organization. And, you know, and I think there's been enough time now that that's been sort of evident. And I think it's real, and I think people allow themselves to trust it. And as a result, you know, there is, amidst all this, you know, kind of on-court kind of tumult, is a bit of a culture developing. I mean, this staff is a tremendously hardworking. And, you know, you're at a shoot-around or any of these kind of availabilities have been at in the last few weeks since things have really gone in the toilet. And there's been no change. I mean, the on-court commitment is there. The pace of what they're going through is there. The attention to detail is there. And, you know, I don't think you could expect much more from a rookie head coach in this kind of situation.
We'll see what Darko and the coaching staff can devise tonight, because they're going up against a juggernaut, if you will. Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray.
I'm going to save yourself, save everybody a minute.
Yeah.
It won't matter.
Yeah. Unless they're cooking up some, matter. You know, trades last minute.
There is nothing, unless they're going to play seven defenders.
Yeah.
There is nothing they are going to do that is going to have any meaningful impact on how Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets play tonight.
You're letting the cat out of the bag, because that's my best bet for later is Denver minus 16. So
16 is
there,
light.
There you go.
The only thing that can possibly have any impact is if these guys, like the Nuggets, just aren't that interested, which is a possibility. It's a possibility.
So I wasn't even going to ask you. I wasn't even going to ask you if they have a chance tonight, because I know they. I don't know. They don't have a chance at either.
They have a chance because, you know, Denver might. And I don't. There's no disrespect to them. They might not show up.
Right.
They might just. You know, it's that's how really good teams lose games like this. It's not like it never happens. But you know, if you're playing the odds. Oh, Alvin Williams, Matt Devlin,
are
just
you on
walking
the radio
in.
Right now?
I'm on the radio. I'm doing very important work. Talking to my friend Ailish. Come on. I was about to say something really smart.
Now we're off track. Oh, no.
Yeah. Anyway.
Conference them in.
I would if I knew how to do that. So that's it. Like, if Denver shows up, it's not going to be pretty. And, you know, I was actually asking Darko about this. Like, what if you just single covered Nikola Jokic? You know, what if you just let him, you know, because, you know, he's real genius at this passing. And what if you just said, okay, go get 70? Would he be interested in doing that? And, you know, no one really wants to try that. That's what I would do. I would just, okay, go get 70, see what happens. But, you know, he might get 80. You never know.
Yeah, I just, like, when it comes to Denver and how good they are playing at the moment, and obviously, you know, culminated in a championship for them, and Nikola Jokic is a odds-on favorite once again to win MVP. He's got Shea trying to chase him down. Like, where do you put the Nuggets in terms of the Western Conference? Because there are some younger teams up there in the standings, Oklahoma City, Minnesota. They're inexperienced when you look at versus the Denver Nuggets. So where does Denver slot in for you? In the West, would they be your favorites heading into an NBA playoff if it started tomorrow?
Yeah, I think they have to be. I mean, I see the Clippers as a real threat. Mm. And, you know, if you kind of imagine, you know, go through the matchups of the Clippers-Nuggets contest, you know, the real question for me is Aaron Gordon has shown himself. He's a pretty good, if there is such a thing, answer for Kawhi Leonard. But who covers Paul George? And then, you know, we're not even getting into, you know, James Harden. But I think that's, you know, that's what the Clippers wanted to do when they teamed those two guys up. A lot of teams will have one really good wing defender. Almost none of them have two that good. And so I that's where I kind of wonder. And the Clippers, is, you know, with Zubac, they've had a little bit of success against Jokic. Like, not much, but some. So I think that's the toughest matchup. But as long as Denver is healthy, and, you know, it's a very, very good team around them. Obviously, Jamal Murray being part of that, and Michael Porter Jr. and the rest. But, you know, you're looking at Nikola Jokic as a guy who is literally unschemable because he is completely committed to making whatever the simplest play is out of whatever scheme is presented. And so the people around him are capable of taking advantage of that. And there's no other player, I don't think, in the NBA. I could almost, would be an interesting discussion if there's one anywhere in sports. You know, Pat Mahomes kind of a little bit has that, where it's just, you know, he really doesn't force much, if anything. It's just, I'll just, you know, figure it out.
Take what you give me.
It looks pretty easy. You know, sometimes it looks spectacular, but I don't think it's hard for him. And, you know, and if that's the centerpiece of what you have, you know, it's a really, that's a really, no one's been able to solve it yet.
We're chatting with Michael Grange of Sportsnet, and your latest article up here talks about someone with kind of a return home, well, home-ish. Bruce Brown, of course, tonight going to be back in a place that was a championship place for him. I wonder for you, like, couldn't be a bigger shift, I guess, in terms of scenery and expectations and how he's managing that, how he's handling that this season with the Raptors when he's going to be looking at a team that just won a championship and he was a part of.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's the life of an NBA role player, right? Or a pro athlete role player is, you know, you can have a year like he had last year where everything was magic and you're playing with some of the best players in the world, and what you do is a perfect fit for what they need, and you win a ring, and then you go in the summer and you sign a contract that's probably double what anyone thought he was going to get. And then, you know, you end up traded twice in the space of a couple of months, and I think he was traded. He came back to Denver on January 14th with the Pacers and got his ring, and it was really nice presentation and everything, and then 2 days later he got traded to Toronto, and then shortly after that, as we know, everything in Toronto went upside down. So, you know, and then he's been hurt. So he's actually questionable for tonight. He actually could help the Raptors, I think, tonight. But it's just, you know, he's a pro. He's carrying himself well. He's a good dude. And this is just how the cookie crumbles sometimes in this league.
He's got lots of time for country music festivals this summer, as you wrote.
Yes, he's very excited about that. he is very excited about going to Nashville for the CMA Fest.
Oh, that's sweet. So, well, Grange, we appreciate your time.
It was during the finals.
There you go. There may be something worked out for him. we appreciate your time. Enjoy as much as you can tonight's game. There'll be lots of scoring. How about that?
Maybe they surprise us. Who knows?
Anyway, thanks, guys.
Thanks Grange. Jesse.
Thanks, Ailish.
Appreciate
Have a good night.
It. Michael Grange of Sportsnet. He's got an article up about Bruce Brown, of course. He's had a recent one about Chris Boucher, whose spot has been very interesting with this Raptors lineup. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, a very depleted roster tonight as they take on the defending champs, the Denver Nuggets, at 9 o'clock. And you can watch that on Sportsnet 1. You have some best bets. We'll save that to the very end of the show. But basically, the Raptors getting cooked by the Nuggets is your spoiler on that. I did want to fit in quickly a little bit of chat about Joey Votto, because this happened Friday during our show, and our show was all about the NHL trade deadline, and now, you know, it's Monday, it's kind of the end of this news cycle for now until Joey Votto does something. I saw him, I think, at least down in Dunedin hitting balls, but I think, so we have an audio clip from Joey Votto. Let's play that first, because obviously there's a lot of excitement, and some people are on either side of the argument, like he's washed, or it's a great opportunity, etc. Let's hear from Joey Votto as he talked about being able to have an opportunity to make the Toronto Blue Jays.
If I had a solid major league contract earlier and there wasn't any interest, this would have been my second pick behind Cincinnati. I would have loved to have finished my career there, but I've wanted to play here since I was wearing a Blue Jays bib. So this is an easy decision for me.
So a Blue Jays bib, and if you've seen on social media, he's already posted this now that he's accepted the training, I guess, minor league deal.
Yeah.
He's got the Blue Jays bib on, so he's like, you know, the John Tavares of the Blue Jays now, pajama boy, bib boy. Nonetheless, I think the way I want to frame it is I think it's actually maybe the best case scenario for Votto and the Jays is because if Joey Votto sucks and he's washed, he even said he might not be, like, this might be the end, but he doesn't know yet. So if they sign him to this minor league deal and he's not good, like, okay, then he gave it an opportunity and the Blue Jays aren't signing him and using, like, a major league spot. He's got to earn his way on. If he does make the team, it's a wonderful story. It's a beautiful story. It's content central for us at Sportsnet, Blue Jays. It's going to be amazing if Joey Votto hits some, like if they hit on Joey Votto. And if not, you know, you don't think he's going to be a part of this franchise somehow moving forward. He wants to live in Toronto. He lives just west of the city. He talked about it down in Dunedin. Like, he's got his foot in the door with the Jays, and I'm sure he won't be going very far. I think it can be a win-win for everyone, and it's pretty low risk and maybe high reward. Why not take the risk?
Maybe they'll carve out a new role for him, assistant offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. once his team is...
get him a headset and a clipboard.
Why don't we just make another coaching spot since the Blue Jays are inventing coaching positions?
Clipboard and a headset, buddy. We're good.
No, I think he's obviously a couple years removed now from having a pretty good season with the Reds. He had 99 RBI, 36 home runs in 2021, and that also lines up with the pretty much the last good season that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has had, but the difference is his age and the fact that he's 40 years old
now.
So the expectation should not be there for Joey Votto. Your point about if it works out, great. If it doesn't, yeah, like that's as long as that's how we're framing it, right? As long as he's not gifted some sort of roster spot because of who he is.
Well, they made him, he's trying out.
Like, that was my concern before they originally brought him in, was like, this guy's pining for a major league roster spot. He ends up getting a minor league roster spot. He just wants to play baseball. Mm-hmm. But he clearly has declined over the last couple of seasons. He's an okay average with runners in scoring position. But aside from that, he's a negative WAR player. And if he's going to be on this team at all, you would hope that it's in a spot where he actually has the means to contribute.
For sure.
And he's not just there because he's Joey Votto.
He's not there
he's
to a be great a mascot Canadian for the baseball Blue Jays. Player. Like, it's,
no, because this is not like the reality is.
That's not the team.
Exactly. It's not. It should not be at this point about feel-good stories and content for us. It should be about winning. And as long as Joey Votto or Daniel Vogelbach or whoever that last roster spot is going to go to, whoever can give you the best chance to win, that has to be who you bring onto the team.
And the Blue Jays haven't earned the opportunity to take, you know, charity opportunities for players.
Exactly. Like there's
even if they had won a World Series in the last 5 years, Joey Votto needs to come on and be a good DH. Like Brandon Belt last year was a similar storyline. Is this guy washed? What's going on with Brandon
Belt?
Injured,
old.
He was great for the Blue Jays. He was one of the best hitters and most consistent players for the Blue Jays. I mean, he's still crazily a lot younger than Joey Votto.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if you frame it in that sense, like Joey Votto's not going to come out here and you know, hit 50 bombs. But can he be better than Daniel Vogelbach? That's the story now of spring training. So you've got that. We'll definitely go through that a little bit more tomorrow. We're going to have some more Jays discussion, but I think Bib Boy could be something.
Yeah, there's no
hashtag
doubt.
Bib Boy.
There's no doubt.
Yeah. And then one other thing just on the Blue Jays is Vladdy scratched from the lineup today with a knee contusion. They're being cautious. It's precautionary, of course. I guess he kind of slid into foul territory, a bit weird on Saturday's game.
Nice play, though.
Yeah, no, so the only thing, and I always hear Blair and Barker say this, only bad things can come from spring training, only injuries.
Seems like it's true.
Maybe the bad thing we're not going to put it on Vladdy. Maybe something else will happen. But everything looks good so far. Just going to be out of the lineup with a knee contusion. Okay. Gerrit Cole also needing maybe an MRI on his elbow.
Yes.
That could be the bad thing that helps the Blue Jays. That's where we're going.
You mentioned Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s injury, and it comes on the heels of the Kevin Gausman soreness in his shoulder and Alec Manoa soreness in his shoulder, and bad things only seem to happen in spring training. Well, Yankees ace and Cy Young winner Gerrit Cole needs an MRI on his elbow, and you don't wish for injuries in anybody, obviously, but it is ultimately good news for the Blue Jays if Gerrit Cole can't go for any length of time. You hope it's not something that's season-ending, but even if he misses a little bit of time now, you wonder if he's going to be ready for opening day like some of the Blue Jays starters. I know Gausman had said that he expects to be ready for opening day, but nonetheless, it's not something you want to see if you're a Yankee fan, and if the Blue Jays can get healthy, they'll have maybe a leg up on the Yankees in the early going there.
Bummer. Okay, quickly, we have 1 minute. We have 1 minute to do our best bets, okay? Mine comes from the biggest Winnipeg Jets fan of the day is Ailish. Winnipeg Jets, -1.5 on the puck line tonight. They got smashed on Saturday night. They are going to come out with a vengeance tonight. Tyler Toffoli making his debut. You can also bet an anytime goal at +175. It's perfect, but Jets to absolutely crush the Capitals, which is up next on Sportsnet, is my pick.
Finishing how you began the show, just
tailing
the Winnipeg Jets. Like I mentioned, I'm going Denver Nuggets -16. The Raptors are playing absolutely nobody, and as long as the Nuggets don't take them lightly, it's going to be a big-time victory for the Nuggets. And also the New York Islanders going for a seventh straight win.
They're red hot.
Patrick Waugh behind the bench. So I like the New York Islanders tonight to keep it going. They're playing a different brand of hockey now, and it's not fun to watch, but they're getting the results.
I've never seen this before. The Toronto Raptors are plus 850 dogs tonight.
Yeah.
Worth $5?
No.
I actually don't. I can't advise that. No. Buy a coffee instead. Yeah. Honestly, it's just irresponsible.
I agree.
Well, okay, that was the fan pregame for me and Jesse tonight. You'll be back tomorrow, one more day.
Let's do it.
We're going to have a fun one. So Monday Night Hockey up next. Thanks for listening.